From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A group of Democratic representatives and senators have introduced what they call a Democracy for All Amendment. If it were to pass, it would become the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and would overturn the controversial Supreme Court decision, Citizens United versus FEC. Every election since the 2012 decision has broken records for the amount of money spent, most of it, by small numbers of extraordinarily wealthy individuals and corporations seeking to influence our political system. Now, activists working for years to undo the damage of the Citizens United decision are hopeful that the Democracy for All Amendment will restore the power of voters. My guest is Ben Gubitz. He's the director of political strategy at American Promise, an organization committed to overturning Citizens United. Welcome to the program, Ben.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So it was a number of representatives, Ted Deutch leading them, along with a couple of senators, including Tom Udall, who introduced this Democracy for All amendment. Is this the first time it's been introduced?
No, this amendment has actually been, this is a reintroduction of the Democracy for All amendment. It has been introduced in a few Congresses before. This is the first time in this 116th Congress that it's actually been introduced in a bipartisan fashion in the House of Representatives. So while it's the same text of the measure that has been introduced before, it's different in that this is the first time it's been introduced with bipartisan support.
So I mentioned that there were Democratic representatives. They include Jim McGovern and Jamie Raskin, John Katko. So there are Republicans who've joined them both in the House and the Senate?
John Katko is actually a Republican from the 24th District of New York. And so for now, that's what we have in the House. Yep. But certainly anticipate many more Republicans in the House joining their Democratic colleagues. As we know, this is not a partisan issue. This is an American issue. And we're happy to see this kind of bipartisan support for this type of reform this early on in the 116th Congress.
Right. It seems as though, even though it should be a bipartisan issue, the Republican Party has taken greater advantage of what the Citizens United decision has unleashed. But it's also sort of egged on Democrats to kind of, if you can't beat them, join them. And it's led to this bizarre race to the bottom for voters, race to the top for corporations and wealthy individuals.
Sure.
How much damage has Citizens United done since the 2012 election, which was the first one after that decision? Have we just seen increasing sort of exponential growth and money thrown at elections from fewer hands, and also just a sort of invisible pull that we don't see because many of these donors remain anonymous?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it really has eroded the foundational principles of our democracy. When we talk about damage, you know, we're talking about an unlevel playing field for average citizens to have an equal voice in our democracy. That's really what the 28th Amendment is all about, is an equal playing field and an equal voice for all citizens and all Americans to participate equally in our elections. To the same extent that right now corporations and large donors and special interests do. They have an outside influence in who wins elections, and then they have an outside influence in the type of policy that is being proposed once those folks are elected, right? So it has electoral implications, and then it has broad sweeping policy implications on many issues that America faces, whether it's income inequality or climate change or the tax burden that my kids and my grandkids will inherit from cutting, you know, special interest tax breaks to the tune of trillions of dollars. So, I mean, this has very broad ranging policy implications, not just electoral implications, but really how the United States dictates its domestic and foreign policy.
So how specifically would the Democracy for All amendment address what Citizens United has enabled? What specifically would it do?
Yeah, so in the Democracy for All amendment, it's basically broken down into three sections. Section one secures political equality for all Americans. This means the equal rights of Americans to free speech, voting, equal representation are protected, and not giving undue influence with those enough money to fund, say, a super PAC, or representation only to those who can afford, to play at this billion-dollar game. You know, previously, a set of Supreme Court decisions have decreed that Americans have no political equality because those with millions of dollars to influence election and policy outcomes have an unfettered free speech right to do so since the Citizens United decision. So the Democracy for All Amendment clearly distinguishes that that spending money in our elections is not the equivalent to exercising free speech rights in our democracy. You know, and Section 2 is also, I think, a very powerful section of the amendment, because it really does distinguish between natural persons and corporations, as we know in Citizens United and previous decisions in Buckley v. Valeo in the 70s, we've seen this idea of corporations having the same inalienable constitutional rights as human beings do. So Section 2 allows us to distinguish between natural persons and artificial entities. And I think that will be, when passed, will have a very positive impact on our democratic process and the way our ability to limit, corporate influence in our elections and government by limiting the amount of spending that can go in there. Right now, because we've struck down in what Citizens United did in striking down the Bipartisan Campaign Finance Reform Act, otherwise known as BCRA, or the McCain-Feingold Act, there is no constitutional right now to limit those campaign expenditures. And so what this amendment does is allow Congress and the states to be able to place reasonable limits on election spending, which we desperately need in our democracy. And that's why I think this amendment is so important. And as we saw, it was introduced on the first day of Congress last Thursday, something that's this important, taking such prominence in the first, few hours that Congress was in session.
So in essence, this amendment asserts that money is not speech, corporations are not people, and that we need to have some limits on campaign spending. I mean, those, it seems, are fairly sensible talking points that you are likely to see a lot of support from most American people across the political spectrum, right?
Absolutely. You know, they are common sense. And as we've seen, over the past, 6 to 7 years, as this movement for a 28th Amendment has really taken form, this has not been a partisan issue among voters. 80% across the board, whether it's Republicans, Independents, Democrats, or Greens, support this type of reform to limit the undue influence of money in our elections, as evidenced by polling, as well as results from ballot initiatives. We saw ballot initiatives in Montana and Colorado advocating for a constitutional amendment put to the voters that passed both at 75%. I'll remind you that Mitt Romney won that state by about 10 points, Montana by about 10 points that same time. So you're seeing Republicans, Democrats, and Independents really turn out in large numbers to support this really historic reform. Most recently, in the 2018 election, Massachusetts had a ballot initiative that created the first in the nation Citizens Commission to examine the role of dark money in Massachusetts elections, and to further impress upon our congressional delegation to send this amendment back to the states for ratification. That won 72% overall in 351 towns in Massachusetts, many of those Republican towns, conservative towns, and ultra-progressive towns. So you really see a real cross-section of Americans that are coming together to support this historic reform. And I'll also add, American Promise has gone to great lengths to make sure that we're driving this cross-partisan message. As you all know, we need 67 votes in the Senate, 290 votes in the House of Representatives in 38 states to ratify this amendment that cannot be done with just one party or another. We are not organizing in a cross-partisan way just because it's nice to have, simply, but because it's necessary to win. And when you look at some of the folks that we've been able to bring on board at American Promise and our advisory council, people like former Republican Senator Olympia Snowe from Maine, former Republican Senator Al Simpson from Wyoming, next to Mike Dukakis, former presidential candidate from Massachusetts, and others, you really see people that that might disagree with each other on a whole host of issues, but are setting aside some of those partisan divides to come together to rescue our democracy before it's too late and it really turns into an oligarchy. And that's where we're headed without this amendment.
So you laid out briefly what it's going to take to put this, to make this a reality, to turn it from a piece of legislation into an amendment. And this is, of course, unlike most pieces of legislation, because we're not just talking about turning a bill into law, we're talking about amending the U.S. Constitution. So there is a necessarily large hurdle to overcome. So the congressional strategy is to try to do it, of course, in a bipartisan way, because you have to. But what about state by state? Those states, then you mentioned a few that have, you know, can states sort of start to preemptively pass their own statewide laws to say, yes, we support this? Or do the states have to wait until Congress passes it and then ratify it?
Well, as we've seen, 19 states so far have officially gone on record calling for a 28th Amendment to the United States Constitution to limit the undue influence of money in our elections.
And we need 38
some
states.
Of those, we need 38 states to ratify, right? And most of those 19 states have passed non-binding resolutions, either through their legislative chambers or by ballot initiatives. So, they will have to go through Congress, but I think what we're seeing with these state campaigns and local campaigns, over 800 cities and towns all across America have also passed similar non-binding resolutions, including in Janesville, Wisconsin, former Speaker Paul Ryan's hometown, that passed 82%, something like that, that are passing local resolutions. So there really is a mandate for these members of Congress to listen to their constituents and their state their state lawmakers, to saying, hey, listen, our people are ready for this. It's time for Congress to step up and act, pass this, send it back to the states for ratification. Again, 19, a symbolic halfway point to 38, have already passed such resolutions. We'll see a lot more in 2019 with really good campaigns going in Wyoming, in Virginia, in Ohio, in lots of other states that we think will join the other 19 states this year in 2019, which is very exciting.
Now, did the congressional elections of last November, which changed the political landscape somewhat, increase the odds of this amendment passing? You have Democrats in the majority control of the House, but they lost a few seats in the Senate.
Sure. Yeah, I think that this could be looked at in a number of ways. I think that it's incredible that the Democrats have made democracy reform a central component of their first priorities in the 116th Congress. The amendment will get hearings in the House Judiciary Committee. The amendment will most likely pass in the United States House of Representatives, which is absolutely historic.
So in the past few times that it's been introduced, it hadn't passed the House?
It had not passed the House. It actually had passed in the Senate with 54 votes in the Senate and cleared the Senate Judiciary Committee, but it had not passed in the House. And so that's historic, and certainly it gives rise to this issue, in terms of prominence. Now, the one thing that I think we all have to be careful of is that it does not become more partisan than it has to. This is not a partisan issue. And that's why American Promise is working so hard every day in the states, in communities, and in Congress to make sure that this is a bipartisan effort. Because if this looks as though it's something that just, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are doing, then it's going to be a harder time to bring Republicans on board. So we have to start from the beginning in a bipartisan manner to make sure that we are bringing, our Republican colleagues along, as well as Democratic colleagues, to make sure we get enough of those votes, 67 in the Senate, 290 in the House. It's not going to be an easy battle, but we literally make progress every day. And the bipartisan support for this is there in the states among state lawmakers. And that just has to trickle up to Congress. And again, we make progress on that every single day.
Now, wasn't one big task the Democrats set out for themselves last year to pass a massive anti-corruption bill, H.R. 1, which has many, many parts to it, one of which is addressing Citizens United?
Yeah, H.R. 1 is the first priority for the 116th Congress, for this new Congress that is a whole suite of democracy reforms, including voting rights, ethics reforms, public financing of elections, overturning Citizens United. There's a whole suite of democracy reform that is part of H.R. 1, which again is very exciting. You know, the amendment in terms of a reform cannot stand alone. There are many reforms that we have to do, including tackling extreme partisan gerrymandering, the way that, restoring the Voting Rights Act. There's so many things that need to be done in addition to the amendment. But we see the amendment as really foundational. We face a constitutional crisis in this nation that's not merely a set of policy issues that can tackle. So American Promise, for one, supports all of these reforms that are part of H.R. 1, including some of those that I just mentioned. We specifically focus on the amendment because we do see that as foundational, and we need a strong structural constitutional foundation in order to build some of these other democracy reforms on top of.
So do you hope that you're going to be able to get more members of Congress, especially Republicans, since that seems to be the imbalance, onto this amendment? I mean, it's just been introduced. Is there a push now to increase support for it in the Republican Party?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there are allies in many congressional offices that are having conversations with each other, staff from different offices working across the aisle, trying to build out the bipartisan and cross-partisan support for this historic amendment. And we do imagine that by the end of the year, we will see lots of other Republican co-sponsors on this bill, as well as other Democratic co-sponsors on this bill in the House.
Does a constitutional amendment require presidential approval?
It does not. No, a constitutional amendment does not require presidential approval. Again, 2/3 of both the House and the Senate in 38 states to ratify, and that becomes the law of the land.
Right, because there's such a high bar, one can essentially override any presidential objection. If we were to have, it's a pretty historic thing to have an amendment to the Constitution passed, right? I mean, this is something that does not happen very often, and with good reason. If we do have such a thing pass, how do you hope it will transform the nation's political system? We just seem to have just such an inordinate influence from corporations, and Americans feel it. Polls of ordinary Americans show that there's a deep distrust of government. They may not understand or know every detail of how dollars are spent, but most Americans get in their gut that corporations have a seat at the table and they don't. Would a constitutional amendment, change that?
It certainly would, yeah. And to one of your earlier points, we passed 12 amendments in the 20th century alone. This is not something that we used to do just back, when folks wore powdered wigs at the founding of our nation, right? 12 amendments were passed in the 20th century alone. And many amendments have overturned Supreme Court decisions. 7 of our 27 have overturned Supreme Court decisions, when the Supreme Court said that women had no right to vote, when the Supreme Court said that African Americans couldn't be citizens, when the Supreme Court said that 18, 19, and 20-year-olds could be drafted into the armed services but couldn't vote, or when the Supreme Court said that if you were too poor to pay a poll tax, then tough luck, you can't vote. All of those decisions and more overturned by the constitutional amendment process. And it's what Americans regularly do when things get off track in our democracy, as we've seen time and time again. And if you look at American history, the very fertile times for reform were based on amendments in the post-Civil War era, in the Gilded Age, in the 60s and 70s. These very rich reform eras, which also were not nice times in American history, were really based, you know, with the foundation of amendments at their core. James Madison said we should only amend the Constitution in extraordinary occasions. I think most Americans agree that we now face our own extraordinary occasion where this type of sweeping structural reform is necessary. And to get to your latter question, in terms of will Americans feel this? Absolutely, right? They will absolutely be able to have more access to their representatives instead of their representatives just paying attention to those that can write large campaign checks. I think that we'll see citizens engage more as citizens of this nation as opposed to just being consumers, which we are now, and really step up and flex their civic muscles once they have the notion that their voice does matter. They do have an impact in what policy is being proposed and legislated on, and not just the campaign donors. And I think that impact will be very real and it will be very quick.
Ben, give out a website for American Promise.
Sure, www.americanpromise.net.
And we'll link to that from our website. Good luck to you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Ben Gubitz is Director of Political Strategy at American Promise, an organization committed to overturning Citizens United. Their website, again, americanpromise.net. We've been discussing the introduction of the Democracy for All Amendment. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram at RU with Sonali.